This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I got marvelous Mrs. Nasal Allergies.
Sniffy goys, the marvelous Mrs. Sniffle goys.
Until we get all that's not in our head.
Listen, we got a cold. We got the flu. It's true of me. It's true of you. We have to go on. We have to proceed. Even though we have some needs for medicine.
I crush the aspirin up and put it on my pimple.
And yes, I will die.
Dry it up.
On this
hopefully
hill.
I won't have it tomorrow.
That's right.
I have
freestyle
to go to the TCAs.
In the 52 Peggy. You're going to the TCAs?
Tomorrow.
In beautiful Pasadena, California, you say.
Pasadena, yeah.
Oh,
might as well
hit
just
me
stay.
Up.
I know,
hit
right? You should come and be one of the photographers.
Oh, I would love to be in
Alice,
your TCA's
Alice,
entourage.
Alice, over here. It's your friend Kevin. I'm the only person saying your name.
I would love to, cheer you on as you field the tough questions from Emily Vanderwerth and Alan Sepinwall and
wow.
Linda Holmes
oh
at the TCA's.
God. Wow.
I know those people.
You do.
I'm familiar, Bill.
I need you at my side.
I would love to
Kevin,
be at your side.
Kevin, I'll say it, and I've said it before. I need you at my side.
That's very sweet. Welcome to the marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Guys, I'm Kevin.
I'm Alice.
And we're the Maisel Guys.
Hey.
I have been in, not in your entourage, but in entourage adjacent situations
yes,
with you.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a turtle for you in a lot of ways.
Oh, my God.
When you're on set shooting or when you're doing a live show, you're
yeah.
backstage at the Wiltern hobnobbing.
I remember when you and Demi came to People of Earth that one time. And
it was just me. Demi wasn't there.
I remember Demi not being there. And I remember when you came to the Wiltern. That was really fun. You really
yeah.
cut. The tension.
I like to Joel Maisel it every now and again or
yeah.
Seth Rogen long shot it and be
yeah.
a supportive man for a woman.
Yeah.
That's greater than me. And speaking of women greater than me, it's episode 303 of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Oh, should I watch Star Trek?
Oh,
fuck.
No.
Okay.
Well, you know, I mean, we can translate
for
everything,
for my coverage
right?
of this episode of Mrs. Maisel.
Live long and prosper.
Read, you gotta live long, prosper. You watch Sex Treks in the City.
I would love that.
So, go for it.
Just go for it. Shit. I love this version of co-hosting. Now, you. let's
like
introduce our guests, friends and folks, everybody. He's a comedian. He is an author, a writer. You may know him from his books, Crap Kingdom, or The Boy Who Couldn't Sleep and Never Had To, celebrating its 10th anniversary this year. Everybody give it the hell up for D.C. Pearson!
Hey! How you doing?
Hey.
That music really gives you a whole
swagger.
Energy. Yeah,
the D.C.
totally.
Stands for Decent Christian Pearson. That's
what?
Right, that's right, that's right.
Don't tell my, I don't know who not to tell.
My
the
wife.
Devil.
Nah, he's a bad boy, stands for don't cry.
Hey, don't cry,
don't
Pearson.
Cry, toxic masculinity, Gary Cooper.
There's no crying in the 50s or the 60s.
The whole decade, it's tough.
D.C., thanks so much for joining us.
Thank
on
you
the
for
show,
having
sir.
Me.
Once
Thank
again.
Thank you for having me.
I believe every, I realized this on the way here, every time we've recorded a podcast together, it's in a different location.
That's
we've
right.
We've never recorded in the same location. We've done four together.
Yes.
Probably something around
wow.
that.
Yes.
UCB Sunset Stage, once in a church office, once in an apartment, and now in the HeadGum Studios.
That's right. Wasn't it funny we that we recorded the podcast that's not about Christianity
in the church
in
office?
A church?
Yeah. Yeah, I've said it before, but most of Gilmore Guys took place in a church office, so
is
it is such
true?
A prequel. Yes.
Wow, that's so
yes,
cute.
Yes, absolutely. They last record there. It was the central location on La Brea in Santa Monica. Mm.
But then you had to tithe 5% of your Audible.
That's right. No, all of our mid-rolls
money.
Did go back to the church. They made bank those years. Oh, man.
Are you guys lost without Christ? You had to advertise them.
Squarespace. It's cross space, I guess. The ultimate CrossFit was Jesus on the cross. But
Animal
DC,
crossing.
we ran into each other at a party a couple of months
yes.
ago. And you said, if you're doing Maisel again,
nice. Right.
Count me
yes.
in.
A which request. I was so flattered yes. by. Oh, I'm so happy.
I'm always flattered by like a request from like an actual person.
Me too.
You know what I mean? Not true. Just like a
as
guy.
As opposed to a, oh.
a girl.
You know,
yeah, a podcast.
A real
like,
capital P person.
Well, someone you admire and respect oh, in the
well,
community.
And also like people on this show we get to come on and they're for various reasons. And it's nice to have like a lot of different people that we book, but a podcast host likes to be asked.
Hey, you know? Call me traditional, but
call me traditional
or non-traditional, truly.
But it's been a lot of Sadie Hawkins lately.
Sometimes it's nice for me. Did you ask out a lot of guys when you were a single lady?
I still do.
Oh, no. This isn't what we want to hear. Ay, 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 ay.
This morning Garrett goes, do you think I should hit boyfriend. That lady up? And I was like, yeah, I guess it's about time for you to start screwing around.
Oh, no. This is how you find out.
Because he didn't contextualize it at all. Mm. And then when he explained who the lady he meant was, I'd never heard of her. So I was like, okay,
it was Lady
why would
Liberty.
You,
he wanted to take a trip
say,
to New York.
Should I hit that lady up? And I was like, who are you talking about? And he was like, the woman who asked me to do that job that's in charge of payroll. Oh, a person that I've never heard of? Yeah, you should. Why did you open with that?
That is a fun part of being in a long-term relationship, though, I feel like, is having just these like long conversations in your own head with yourself.
Yep.
And then assuming because you share so much with your partner that you yep. told them about that, or like you'll make like a plan or whatever, and then you'll realize only should, when you're like,
yeah.
wait, but why did you plan that thing on Saturday? Weren't we going to do X, mm-hmm. Y, and Z weird thing? And then that's when you realize you never actually no. shared that
you had
with
a whole
the person.
Plan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, precisely.
You're like us sitting at a picnic table.
Oh, I relate she knows to all
with a bomb
about
underneath.
It.
It's a Hitchcock
it's
example
a
of suspense.
Or with Obama underneath. Hello, what am I doing here?
Really hello? Good Obama.
Hello? Under the hello? Blanket. Just like you asked me to be. Not so busy lately.
Obama. I like that Obama was in the Rat Pack is something I'm learning from this impression. Oh. Hey, Obama.
Obama, maybe. Who loved the movie Diane.
Fly
you can check it on
moon?
His top 10 movies of the. Did you see the list he put out? He put out his like regular Obama's picks that
oh,
he does
sure,
now
sure,
that he's
sure.
in his like retired uncle phase mm-hmm. of his life.
And?
Diane, I think Parasite was on there. I think The Farewell was on there.
Nice.
And then he put a couple of TV shows, but it was TV shows that were as powerful as film, which was such a backhanded.
Weird, yeah, that's
isn't
very
that funny?
Baby boomerish, I feel
yes.
like, to be like, oh, you know what I mean? To
God,
be a little
I wish
bit like.
Fully. Yeah.
Wow, it's interesting. Yeah. These were as powerful as not just movies, films.
Yeah.
Yes, that's
powerful as films.
What if
but
he
I
said,
saw
like
in
Big Bang
cinema.
Theory and we were like, oh, God.
It was Fleabag, Watchmen, and Big Bang Theory were his three. Those were the three.
No, he didn't.
No,
he didn't say
Fleabag and Big Bang Theory were.
He said Big Bang.
No, Fleabag and, okay. and Watchmen actually were, though.
I don't want to do this podcast with you anymore.
Oh, no.
I was just
PTSD.
Unrelated, but yes. I was just at lunch and overheard a couple people, as you do this time of year. It's award season. Everybody's mm-hmm. talking movies.
We're all
what
making
have
our
you
top
seen?
10
what
list
do you know?
On Letterboxd.com.
Exactly. And there was a couple of people next to me and they were chatting and the it was a guy and a lady. And the guy said, yeah, and then I saw Parasite, and I know everybody was, like, all crazy about that one, but... And then he didn't say anything verbally, but I could tell he was just kind of going, like, meh. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there, I had could have no other reaction than, like, you fucking son of the 1%. You goddamn Elysium-occupying yeah. fucking...
Seething.
Poor people grinding into cricket bricks. Motherfucker.
Oh, no, truly. No, and I do want to emphasize that, especially in the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goy's podcast, liking or disliking a piece of pop culture does determine whether you're a good yes. or bad person.
Whether you'll yeah. be first against the wall when the revolution comes?
Categorically.
Right. Yeah. You're just sorting yourself for us.
No. Especially when you're saying, like, no, maybe it was a little
I
overhyped for me.
I actually think it's the preamble that he had to do it. It was like, I know a lot of people like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right.
And
exactly.
then he's like, and you could hear him going, like, I don't like hype unless I create it myself. And
yes.
then, but if a guy had been like, I saw that movie Parasite that my daughter told me to see, I didn't understand it. You'd be like, he's good.
Exactly. Yes.
I think the best way to experience
I can admit my
most
failures.
All of this stuff is in a vacuum. Seeing things before there are takes that have calcified in the discourse.
Oh my gosh.
Is amazing. When I saw La La Land and it was like the second week or like opening week
I believe
or something.
It's pronounced La La Land.
La La Land. it was great because it's like I didn't have to think right. of it as like an inherently political object, whether right. I like that or Moonlight more.
Right.
I'm just going to, before we get into Maisel, I'm going to read off his favorite movies. of 2019, American Factory, which he produced.
Oh, really?
Nice. Yes. Obama. Which,
high on your own supply.
If I put out my top 10 podcast list of 2019, it was like, good Christian fun. Maisel Coys. That'd be what it's like. Amazing Grace, Apollo 11, Ashes of Pierce White, Atlantics, Birds of Passage, Booksmart, Diane, The Farewell, Ford v. Ferrari, The Irishman, Just Mercy, The Last Black Man in San Francisco, Little Women, Marriage Story, Parasite, The Souvenir, Transit, and a quick list of TV shows that I considered as powerful as movies, Fleabag Season 2, Watchmen, and Unbelievable. Which Unbelievable was wonderful.
I hadn't seen Unbelievable.
It's so good.
Until last night, and I loved it.
Oh, wow. That was a real journey.
Yeah. I
you're really playing with time there.
It's true.
Not on his list, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Season 2.
He hates the Catskills. He did not carry them in 2008 or 2012.
Why'd they spend so much time on that doctor?
I did see him the other day. I took some paparazzi pictures. He was getting like breakfast somewhere, and it just said, "Let Susie be gay."
Ooh,
on his shirt.
I mean, what a valid point.
So niche.
A valid point.
That's not even a shirt, is it?
Not yet.
Right in.
Remember those wonderful people that dressed up as Susie for our live show?
Mm-hmm.
What a great time.
God, they
was.
Were awesome.
It was so great. And such a great go-to Halloween costume. Even
very doable.
Because it's
very
so doable. Iconic. And it's, not expensive to do.
And you might already be wearing it.
Yeah, you might already be wearing it. So,
ask yourself.
Look in the mirror. It really takes stock. Yeah. But we talked about you doing the show. What did the show mean to you the first two seasons that you watched it? Why was it so powerful for you?
So I feel like my entry point for Gilmore Girls was really doing the Gilmore Guys podcast. So my wife had seen pretty much all of Gilmore Girls. And at the time, this is a while ago, she had recently rewatched it because her roommate at the time would like it. In her roommate's sorority, Gilmore Girls DVDs were like the go-to like currency. Like people would like, they would just all chill and like watch them like in the common area, just like over and over and over again. And so this girl who has since moved back to where she's from was like in LA, and as we all feel moving to LA was like lonely and kind of like disassociated from everything that she knew. And so back when she was living with my wife, who was then my girlfriend, they would watch Gilmore Girls like, and my wife had already seen it all the way through, so she was like very steeped in it. And then so I watched Gilmore Girls mostly. We started watched the first couple seasons, and I did your guys podcast. And
what a great time.
Loved it. It
DC
was a really
caught
fun
up
time.
44 episodes into the show just to do the season 2.
But it was, I'd always kind of meant to watch it, and I knew I would like it, and I did, because people are talking very fast. Mm. They like food and they like coffee and they speak quickly. And that's really pretty much all I need. I also really enjoyed seeing the that one mountain in Burbank looming over Stars Hollow every time. I really genuinely love, I'm that person where I really like spotting like LA landmarks and things and being like, oh, that's where they shot that.
I do too, yeah.
What backlot do you think they filmed this on is like genuinely really fun for me, because I'm a know-it-all and I can't help it.
At least
so
you're
that,
aware.
That was kind of my gateway drug into the Paladino verse. The Sherman Paladino verse.
Oh, sure. Oh, it's a verse for sure, as we saw in this episode.
Yeah. And then started watching Maisel, like, I think, like, after it came out. I think it was sort of like you were saying, like, being after the hype cycle on something. Like, the first season had been out long enough that when we started watching it, could kind of, like, form my own opinion. And I just really liked that they actually seemed into kind of, like, tracking the actual ups and downs of somebody, like, forming their own voice as like a comedian, and also just like as an artist, and kind of like most shows, I feel like it's sort of like, yeah, this person does that are about comedians or about artists in general. It's like this person does that thing, but it's mostly just that's a fun job to say that they have while we put them through sort of like normal sitcom plots.
Yes.
But I like that in this, they actually sort of like are tracking her arc of like, this is how she's getting into this thing, and this is how she's having to make sacrifices for it, and this is how she's finding a balance within it and like balancing it with her own identity. And then that on top of all the like Amy Sherman Palladino-y stuff of like people are talking fast. There's like, it's very quippy, which I really like. And then on top of that, the period of it all and how much they seem really into like steeping it into actual period
spending
stuff.
Spending Bezos money.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then on
Thank
top
you,
of
Daddy
all
Bezos.
Of TYDB. And then on top of all of that, the just sort of like real production design, like eye candy, all the costumes, all the like you were saying, like in season two, like the Catskills, like just the amount of fun that everyone is so clearly having. I remember somebody told me, you guys have probably already talked about it, but that they like will have when they're doing street scenes, they'll have like dancers be extras. Mm-hmm. And so yeah. that they can like
yeah.
be with like all the super complicated like camera blocking
yeah.
so that they can get like in the way of stuff where it's like, oh, there's a Prius. Okay. Pirouette in front of
everyone's fully dancing.
Yeah.
In when you watch incredible. Those scenes back and those long, like, you know, like the 3 minute oneer that opened the yeah. season at the USO oh, yeah. base and right. stuff. And then the way, even in like simple scenes where, oh, it's interior of a barbershop or something, the way everyone's weaving and dodging, I
right.
think it totally makes sense. And Amy ASP was a dancer in a former life.
Hence Bunheads, which yeah. I still haven't seen.
Yes, yes, yes. You're fine. You good. That podcast
like
is over.
Bunheads is really weirdly dark.
Yeah.
In a way that I did not expect. But
yeah, there's
you know,
some Maisel origin story stuff in that, for
yeah.
sure.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, the whole show just kind of feels like somebody who spent a lot of years inside of a like network kind of like somewhat restricted production system where it's like basically all the scenes are going to break down into the exact same camera blocking mm-hmm. and it's just people talking. And if you want to do a cool shot, we'll maybe give you like two of them per season.
Right.
Maisel really feels like, it feels like, or like Roma was for Netflix, where it's like if and when... I mean, it's going to happen eventually, this whole kind of like streaming bubble kind of bursts where it's just like people are throwing so much money at this kind of content and these kind of creators. We're really going to look back at stuff like, I feel like Roma or Maisel and be like, that was such a cool time when creators were being just given like unlimited yeah. tech money
yeah.
to really put literally do pretty much whatever they want to do.
Because truly everyone is being overpaid in the current climate right now. Even like Scorsese and Irishman
well,
stuff. Like
not yeah. everyone. Everyone who already had money.
That's right.
Excuse me.
If you have money coming in and if you're like, yeah, that's why it's a bubble.
Everybody
right?
at that
right.
tier.
That's why there yes. has to be a burst because there's so many, everybody who's doing the grunt work of being a creative officer in this whole system is like scraping by. Mm-hmm. And like we're like tweeting it like help us, you know, and like everybody else, and then the you know the studio executives, and then Scorsese are making all the money.
On the Hollywood Reporter, there's a really interesting directors roundtable with some of the directors of the best movies from the last year, and Lulu Wang's in it, and she's talking about how The Farewell, she turned down, and she didn't name names, it was probably Netflix or Hulu, she turned down a really lucrative streaming deal to
MailChimp.
Do A24. Com. Yeah, she turned down MailChimp money instead to do A24, because she said, I'm not a brand yet, so they're not going to promote me, I'm just going to get you know heaped onto the pile, and they're not going to give
yeah.
the attention and due that it deserves, and
yeah.
like we probably wouldn't know what The Farewell is if it had been on Netflix.
Right.
If you're already a Baumbach or a Scorsese or a Palladino,
they'll promote the hell out of
then this
you.
Is great.
Right.
Or a Jim Gaffigan or an Alana Glazer.
For example, in
for
theory,
Amazon.
Theoretically, hypothetically, yes.
Well, we're not associated with Amazon, so we don't
yeah,
need
we
to
have
like,
no,
we need to kowtow to their promotion.
We have no financial or monetary
I mean,
you guys,
ties
or listeners,
whatsoever.
They're lying. They're both suspended from Amazon delivery drones right now.
Can you imagine?
It's actually uncomfortable.
Silently.
And the mics are on the
it's
drones,
just
too.
Stupid.
They don't need
like,
to be.
Yeah, it's
we could
silent,
hold them.
But we could just stand. I agree with you about the aspect of the show that's like watching a creative person become their full selves as an artist. And I also like the fact that, like, just like you were saying, the other stand-up shows we've seen, like even Louis, it's like his life is somewhat fodder for the stand-up. But this... It mirrors the way that stand-ups, when they start doing stand-up, really work, which is that, like, suddenly your whole life becomes pretty insignificant in contrast to what you're doing on stage. And so everything you go through all the time starts to become, like you know, it's all pulled into into that 10 minutes, you know, that you have, because it's just, like, you're so obsessed with it. Which I feel like the first two seasons, I mean, the first season definitely was about that, I think, for Midge. And then I kind of complained because it got to be less so. But they did a good job, and I was fascinated
yeah.
by that.
And it's so funny watching this in 2020 now, because when it premiered in 17 or 8, yeah, into 17, it felt like stand-up was like the most overrepresented profession on TV. And now it's like, oh, all those shows are gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this feels like the last woman standing out of all those in a sense. Yeah. Do you guys know that podcast Blank Check?
Yes.
It's a podcast hosted by Griffin Newman and David Sims. They love movies, and what they do is they pick a director and then watch all of their stuff. And then it becomes less about, like, each individual movie and, like, who is this person that made all these movies? Like, who is James Cameron? Because every movie, it's like that, I know I've said on here before, every movie or TV show is two movies and TV shows. One is the actual movie or TV show, and the second is the documentary about the people who made it. And if you watch it, you can, like, see... Uh-huh. Oh, who was it? What were they going for? What was their intention? You kind of see like the ones and zeros of the matrix of that.
Oh, wow.
So with that in mind, let's talk about...
Do they sponsor us or why did you talk about them?
Just because I feel like this has become an accidental Blank Check podcast where it's like, who is Daniel Palladino? Who is Amy Sherman Palladino?
Well, you've you've been along for... Or not along for, but like...
Yeah.
You've spent a lot of time in... In her head.
Hat. Yeah, yeah.
I've spent a lot of time in that hat, that big old hat of hers, my man. I mean, countless
it's like
hours.
This podcast is a Blank Check podcast, but not about a different director every time.
Yeah.
It's just the same one.
The same one over the course of 6 years.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that is a weird. I do think, though, it is a weird thing where you think about, like, both as a fan and as an artist, you go and you watch a person's, like, new movie or listen to their new album or whatever, and you're like, oh, this again in terms of like theme and stuff sometimes, but then you're also a little bit like, yes, this again, like, you know what I mean? It's a weird like push pull. And I feel like people have that. I definitely like feel that myself sometimes where it's like, oh man, I thought I was doing something totally different. And then I just realized it's the same shit. You know what I mean? Like, that's why I really responded to that thing is because when you strip away all the sort of like Mad Lib specifics of it, it's just the same. It's the same arc or it's the same whatever. Mm-hmm. I remember there was like, I guess, I think it was The Master. Like Paul Thomas Anderson was doing a interview promoting it. And somebody was like, or maybe it was a Q&A or something like that. And they were like, so, you know, here we have another in your sort of like career long obsession with like fathers and sons and that kind of relationship and a sort of contentious whatever. And Paul Thomas Anderson was like, oh, he was like, I really thought I didn't do that this time, but you're totally right.
Whoa.
I did. He was like, he was like, I was convinced I was doing a thing that was like a million miles away from that. I so wasn't doing that. But now that I think about it for a second, you're totally right. It's just another one of those. But again, you go like, not that there's anything wrong with that, because there's clearly a reason that we're drawn to those, whatever story we're drawn to, whatever.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, like I don't want Bruce Springsteen to write songs about trains all of a sudden. Stick to cars.
He'll give you a train. I feel like he'll give you a train.
Well, Downbound Train, Tucson Train. Never mind. He's written like 10 songs about trains.
No, but you wouldn't
planes, I should say.
You wouldn't want Bruce Springsteen to suddenly write songs like, I got a Cadillac in the drive and I got a great house on the beach. You know, he wouldn't.
He kind of did do that with 57 Channels and Nothing On in 1992.
No, but he's about the banality of the working class.
Yes.
So,
yes,
like,
yes,
it'd be
yes.
weird if he was just like, got a private jet waiting for me in the garage. It's a big garage.
The opening lyrics of 57 Channels is, I got a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills.
Oh, fuck you.
It really is.
Again, I'm not doing this podcast.
But I think it is all to be like, oh man, now we're just transitioning into the Springsteen podcast, aren't we?
Well,
we probably should. I mean,
Steencast.
Hey,
and then we're
who else was taken out of that little Steven Van Zandt cameo in The Irishman when you watched it?
I genuinely did not know it was him.
Really?
Which is unforgivable because I did see it on the big screen.
Because you love
until
the
afterwards.
Sopranos.
I know.
Too.
Oh yeah, for sure. I didn't. Just like, it didn't whoa! Process it.
It was wild stuff. Couldn't get enough of
it. Didn't stay awake.
No. This is 303. The episode is called Panty Pose, written and directed by Daniel Palladino. Could you tell before his name came up?
Danny Pals.
Danny Pals, back at it again. I mean, this is something I feel like we've even trained listeners to do now. Is like, it's either going to be Amy or Dan that write these now, because they're the only two that write any of them. Mm-hmm. And can you tell which it is before you see the credit at the end now, which used to be at the beginning? The synopsis is Rose and Abe move into a less than desirable new digs. Midge struggles with her act as Shy's tour kicks off. Joel and May spark a connection. And we're going to kick this off the way we do every episode of Maisel Goys with a little segment we call
12 o'clock rock. We're going to
pop
around
the culture
tonight.
Pop around the culture tonight. Where we
Which
take,
is a backdoor pilot.
Yeah, that's right.
Different podcast.
Yeah. No, and again, it'll be on the same network as the Springsteen podcast we're going to do. So here it is. Pop around the culture, every pop culture reference in the episode.
The answer mime and joke?
That was mine.
Pack everything we own into a one bedroom like we're the Collier Brothers.
We are not the Collier Brothers. They had an apartment.
Groucho waits for you.
I'd rather hear gun smoke. I may be able to get a radio signal.
Tolstoy.
Tell me your inner Eric Severide, my brother.
I was at an orgy once, and the man behind me kept raving on and on about August Strindberg. Turned out to be Eugene O'Neill. Small world, huh?
That's it.
Wow. Right.
The Collier Brothers were like famous hoarders, which I didn't know about in New York.
Yeah, I was one of those things where I was like, and this is a fun... It annoys me. This is also another thing I really like about the Paladinos and their work is all the pop culture references. And a thing that always annoys me is if you make a pop culture reference, which I am prone to do, when people are like, oh, I don't get it. I don't know that reference. So therefore, I like don't get it, which annoys me because I feel like some of my favorite references are ones I don't get.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're like, when I was growing up as a kid watching The Simpsons, and it's like they're making a bajillion references. You might not know what they're to, but they're just specific. And so they're... funny, or as long as the joke isn't relying. All that to say, the Collier Brothers one I really liked because I didn't know what it was. And so then I like Googled it very quickly and they're fascinating.
Oh yeah.
They're
so it's like
super
a gift
interesting.
You get to open twice.
Yeah, totally. So like, granted, I didn't then like laugh, I guess, which is the point of a joke.
Maniacally.
So maybe people are right when they're like, that's bad if I don't get the pop culture reference. But go read the Collier Brothers Wikipedia page because they were like two weirdo brothers and they had like their parents got divorced and they lived in New York and then they like
look at these weirdos.
Yeah, they're super
so old timey.
They look like they're in a race to be the shittiest Einstein. And they lived by the end of their life, they basically lived in like a set from the movie Seven that was their like parents' old house and that they had inherited that was like up in Harlem and they had like tunnels through the trash in their apartment, like that they had accumulated and hoarded in their apartment. It's the grayest. It's some of the grayest.
The grayest of gardens, honestly.
But if it's what if Big Edie and Little Edie had Home Alone style booby traps to keep out intruders?
Oh my god!
Which was also a little bit there. You definitely got the feeling that they were agoraphobic, but also a little bit racist because they were white, and the neighborhood was kind of changing around them, and Harlem was becoming more black people in Harlem, and they were just like, we're so paranoid about the world, we never want to leave our apartment, and then they like one of them died in there, and people were smelling it on the street, so
now,
they called the cops.
Is
and then,
that not the most apt and elegant metaphor for white supremacy? That like as the demographics change around you, you try to preserve your culture to the extent that you are, and then your culture is actually an apartment full of trash.
Yes.
And then you die inside of it,
yes.
And it smells like your dead, rotting corpse.
No, totally. Like
I feel like that's a pretty good.
You basically make a decision not to grow at a certain point, and your world just gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and you're covered in your own filth, and you can't smell it anymore.
Yes.
Totally. We're all describing a relative of ours, but each one is different.
Names.
I actually am not thinking of somebody specific, but I am thinking of people that people that I know.
Swaths of people.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, for sure. But and then reading about that, which was really fun, they had on the Wikipedia page, like in pop culture or whatever, and there's an episode of SVU that's like based off of them, even though they were from like the 20s or 30s or whatever. And
you know,
SVU
would do these themed episodes where it's like it's a 1940s noir. This one takes place in a candy.
And Benson and Stabler
world.
on the holodeck.
That's right.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
Can you imagine SVU did like
just reveal
the musical episode?
That'd be so amazing if one of them was animated with McGruff the crime dog coming
yes.
in.
Yes,
that would rock.
So
slash Scooby Doo.
That'd be so cool.
But they had an episode that was based on them, and one of the brothers was played by Wally Shawn. And I'm reading that, and then later in this episode, Wally Shawn shows
it.
Up.
I'm like, when he
All
pops up for,
to Wally
for literally three lines, I'm like, do I have a misunderstanding of Wallace Shawn's career or of the cachet of Paladino
and
Daddy Bezos' money?
No, I think it's the cachet of Paladino, Daddy Bezos' money. The fact that, like, as if you're Wallace Shawn and it's a big streaming show, you get to be in a scene with
Borstein.
Borstein.
But that's it.
Jane Lynch.
Oh, yeah, I guess he's for like, a second,
you're
going
to be opposite Jane Lynch in the scene is really the description of what that is.
I guess
and there's
so.
More in there's more in the scene than that got cut for the episode.
But TBH, I feel the way about the same way about Sterling K. Brown, where it's like, thrilled you're here, but also, why?
Well, it definitely makes me regret turning down the role of Midge.
Yeah, and you were offer only on that. They offered, and you said no.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, but,
sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really sucked.
Oh, no.
You should, yeah. That was a big mistake. Too bad you didn't have a Susie.
But here's the thing. At the same time, at the same day, you were like, I hear this show is coming out. Do you want to do a podcast about mm-hmm. it? And so I chose the podcast.
Yeah, it was a Sophie's podcast choice.
But with Wally Shawn, though, I do just feel like he's like, I was thinking when he was in the scene, is like, he's the patron saint of like New York actors. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? He's just a theatery guy. Mm-hmm. He's just around. I feel like he just likes to work. Mm-hmm. Working is cool. Like, I think he's,
exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
no ego.
I don't think he has some
yeah.
manager who's overthinking what his brand is, where it's like, not Maisel next for you. You got to do X, Y, and Z thing.
Absolutely,
you know what I mean? I think he's just around and
yeah.
he likes to work and it's a cool
and
thing.
And he's a very outspoken socialist as well.
Being the age that he's at and you like to work, that's what most of us, our career is going to be. It's not going to be like calculated moves like that, because even though he's Wallace Shawn and he's done incredible things and he's like a household name in his own right, it's still, he likes to work. This is a fun show to be on. And you get to, and the other thing is like, he's trying to make that bank. He wants to go in for one day.
Yeah, that's fair.
And be Wallace Shawn.
And he did
show.
It before. They can bring him back.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, keep the streak alive.
Yeah. The lesser the role, honestly, the better. At a certain point.
At 76, probably.
Yeah.
And he'll probably just use it to fund like another weird production of like a Chekhov play that like is in his apartment.
Yeah.
Because he'll like do that, I guess.
Yeah. Like,
I don't
Clooney's
know if he still does,
espresso
but he'll, like,
ads for the drone over the war criminals.
I keep getting
house.
Invited to them, but I haven't gone.
Wally Shawn's apartment production.
You keep choosing the podcast over those. You can go.
You do a podcast about Vanya on 42nd Street.
I do. Yes, exactly.
Oh my God.
Sucks.
For the sake of time.
Alice,
yeah, for real.
That,
like,
man?
What are you doing?
Well, it's this is closer.
I kind of don't even want to talk about the parents in this episode.
Let's skip it.
It's just a lot of nonsense and
it's awful.
What I would call Daniel Palladino shenanigans.
Here's the thing about the parents.
Yes.
I couldn't feel more differently. I love them. I feel like when you bring together
when you bring together
Pollock and Tucci.
Yeah. Tucci.
Not Tucci, I'm sorry. Fucking
Shalhoubi. Yeah.
When you bring together Pollock and Shalhoubi, oh my God, it's really like you're crossing the streams in a great way. I love it.
I want more from them. I want more for them, rather.
Oh yeah.
On like a story thing where it's like intersecting with Midges in some meaningful way that's not just like,
it's so
here we go, because it truly is like a sitcom plot of like, what if your in-laws moved in with your in-laws?
It's
double
also
the in-laws.
Well, then get to that too is the other thing for me. It's like, what if your in-laws moved with your in-laws? Let's not do the what if your in-laws moved with your in-laws. Let's do they're there already and let's film that. Why do we need the scene of Rose and Abe walking, like a tracking shot of them walking through the apartment going, we're out of options. We've done this. We've done that.
Yeah.
I tried that. I know. You tried it. It's like, what are we doing?
I'm fully out on Rose this season on Forge, too. Mm. I was hanging on, and I thought she had some interesting stuff to do. But it's sad, and I don't want to be neggy about it, but it's not working for me.
Yeah.
I was a little bit
hoping she was going to stay in Oklahoma.
Oh, wouldn't that have been?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was like, this is a very interesting milieu. I feel like I kind of wanted to see her sort of stick around and be like, I'm going to, and who knows, maybe that will eventually happen, but like, I'm going to get this like seat on the board. I thought that was such an interesting environment.
A weird
for the
There
show.
Will Be Blood subplot with Rose would be amazing. She's covered in oil.
I thought they were going to get into a like Killers of the Flower Moon thing, where it turned out that like Rose's family had like had a bunch of like Native American oil heirs like murdered in order. I didn't really, but like
I do love that, and I think
did you guys read that book.
No, I've heard of it.
Fascinating, yeah, definitely check it out.
Or if it's just like the history of like Jews in Oklahoma.
Yeah, totally. I thought
that was
such an interesting
crazy.
World.
Mm-hmm. Because it's not what you think of at all when you think of the state.
And so a little bit when she was like, I'm gonna get a seat on this board, I was a little bit like, I'll watch that.
Yeah.
I'll keep cutting back to Oklahoma, this like cool.
I'll watch that instead of them like looking at Craigslist.
Yeah.
You know?
It's grieving like really over the loss of frivolity in their lives.
Yeah, for two whole episodes.
I will say, yeah. I do think there is something that this show and other sort of like streaming shows have that does drive me a little nuts sometimes, which is a sort of like where the pacing for certain story moves is a little bit like, you would never see this on a network show. In some ways, that's great. It allows you to like really stretch out and explore. And like, we can literally watch Midge's whole set. We can watch Shy do a whole song. We can do all these things that are just like, almost like fun kind of movie musical things where it's just like, we're just going to live in this. This is enjoyable.
Absolutely,
we're going to watch this.
Absolutely a musical. Yeah.
And then pack some story turns in there as well. But then I feel like for other moves, I agree. Sometimes I want to see them get to the part that you know is coming sooner.
Right.
That said, as somebody who, I can understand how if I didn't like those characters and them in combination, it would have been more of a dread thing. But for me, because I like those couples, I like them together, I like their dynamic. And then when they were moving in at the end, there was a big part of me as a fanboy that was just like, ho, 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 here we go.
In a
sort of
Weiss
like, which I think
fanboy.
They want you as like a binging person. They want to propel you to the next episode to be like, what kind of crazy stuff are they going to get up to?
Sure.
Even though sometimes this somewhat slacker pacing of certain things does.
Yeah. And I think, so I didn't do what I did last season where I did one at a time as we did this show.
Oh. Right.
I just
You've already gotten to the end. See, I've only seen
thing,
up to this.
Yeah.
I've only seen up to
you
three.
You know what? And I'm glad that you did, but I was like really excited to do that. Mm-hmm. And then I watched this past episode and I realized like, oh, I can't. Like if I, because I watched the first 12 minutes of episode 3 before I came in and recorded episode 2 with you. And I was already talking about stuff.
Yeah, it got all mixed up. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know how your brain works, but my brain cannot keep track. So
I have to watch it three times and freaking
do
the clips and stuff.
Clips.
It's not a better brain.
But you have to work harder.
It just has a little more time.
Just a better work ethic. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Such is the case. And for me, the first two episodes of the season was like, okay, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
And then you get on that plane, take off to Vegas, the show takes off too. Along with it.
Yeah, away.
That whole dynamic. Oh, away they go.
Do you think it's away? But I mean, like, are you like partially super into the Vegas side plot because it's far away from the plot line you hate?
Kinda. Like,
physically?
I think that's a part of it. But also,
you don't
just,
like the parents, or is there another one you don't like?
No, just like, I mean, honestly, I like Joel way more in this season than I have in prior seasons.
I also get so annoyed why we don't use Imogene more.
Yeah,
it's
she's
like,
only in like
so
three
fun
this season.
Whenever. She's there. Mm-hmm. She should just be around. I don't know.
Yeah, make like her a tour assistant or something on the road.
Or put her in the situation with the parents.
Yeah.
I feel like that would help levity.
Or ground it a little.
Oh,
bit.
I can see
she's
that.
Not,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
She doesn't have frivolity like they do.
Mm-hmm.
So she's always the person that's like there to be like, oh, I understand. You need a walk-in closet because otherwise you're going to, you know, and, you know, just replaying the scene where she was trying to understand why Midge would be mad at her manager. Oh, my God, we got to talk about that Susie scene with, there's so much Susie in this episode, but the one with her and Sophie.
Oh.
Where she said those magic words to Sophie.
You'll always come number one.
That was triggering for me.
Yeah, because saying that to two different people and just like the kind of understated, like kind of grievous way Borstein played it too, of like, oh, I guess this is what I'm doing now and this is what's required.
And it's like, welcome to Hollywood.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This is one thing I will say about season 3 that I do think is so, having watched it start to finish, is like the way that they're actually honestly interrogating some of those really complicated dynamics of manager and artist stuff, I think is pretty lovely. And especially when it comes to even Susie and Reggie talking to each other and having conversation about it. I think it's pretty beautiful. And yeah, for people like who do have those sort of relationships in their lives where it's like, well, in theory, this person's supposed to be looking out for me.
Yeah.
It can be triggering in a way.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Damn.
Okay, so for me, the highlight of this episode, everything with Reggie, baby. Everything with Sterling K. Brown.
Well.
Working well below his pay grade. He doesn't have to do this.
You're so worried about Sterling.
I am. Well, I'm also delighted, too, because it's like if you're on This Is Us and you have kind of your pick of the litter to some degree of you were also in Black Panther, one of the highest grossing movies of all time. You have to imagine, oh, I cannot go off and do a nice A24 movie, and I can go off and do a season of a comedy show where I get to play dramatic beats as well.
Yeah, and also, like, I think with this, maybe it's just like, up until this point, granted, I haven't seen This Is Us, so I don't have like firsthand knowledge of his character. So I might be totally wrong about what his character is like on that show. But I think if you're somebody who up until this point has played, and I'm sure they'll paint Reggie, you know, and give him other sides. But like so far, I feel like, oh, he just gets to play a real fucking hard ass.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like we've seen that from him. It's probably a hoot. You know what I mean? Like for him not sort of being the like People versus O.J. Simpson sort of like, I'm a paragon of integrity and I'm just trying really hard and I'm really pouring my all into this to just play a guy who's like, listen up, fuck you, that's my name. Yeah. Must be really fun.
Like I am unreasonable.
Yeah.
And also, it's so fun to play.
But also beloved too.
Yes, right.
By people in the, so it's not just
that's a classic ASP, right? Like this character comes in being like, I don't stand for anything and I'll take nothing. And everybody's like, yay, this person. That's like such an ASP standard.
Yeah, but I was like really like, you know, and not like we're in the position to even comment or give points in any meaningful way. But like truly the first black relationship we've seen in a Paladino show ever.
I see that and appreciate
unless,
it a
like,
lot.
Michelle and his the mom relationship.
No, because they could have done so much there. They could have easily gone so Reggie's going to talk to Susie and Shai's going to talk to Midge and then Nair the two shall meet, you know, even though we're said that they have a relationship. But we're really seeing the interactions between this Shai Baldwin and his group of musicians that he works with and this Reggie and their relationship to those musicians. We are seeing them and their world in a really deliberate way that I'm like, yeah, I see you. That's good. I appreciate the fact that you're not pulling back on having this be a central structure of the show.
Yeah, and I feel like you just get it so much in those beats of when they're like goading each other on to sing and Midge's second set in the smaller room and just really sincerely human moments in a way that like obviously it's not defined by ethnicity or anything, but just like really tender but tough, but it feels real.
Yeah.
Which is like the whole point of ASP shows is like do everything in this heightened style that actually is getting at this core.
Right, exactly. Human truth. Is why I think it, like what I was saying about the character of Sterling K being like this guy Reggie coming in and being like, I am the, you know, in a lot of ways, I'm the best worst. Hi, I'm the best worst. It's like that's the kind of ideal character that you want to play in the ASP world. And I think they've got a really good one for him. And so I'm kind of proud. Is that weird?
I know. It's like, are we proud of her? I know. Because it's like, what are you looking to these shows for? And it's like, I don't want a 360 degree view of the black experience in the 1960s Paladino, you know?
Right. But at the same time, is erasure to talk about the 1960s entertainment industry without talking about that, you know, like that portion of it, like as though it didn't exist, as though not all culture is lifted wholesale from like the black community and creators, you know? So,
yeah, I felt like it was a really lovely relationship that we'll see continue to blossom throughout the season.
We will? See? Spoilers.
Oh, no.
I hate
well,
this.
Okay, come on. Well, how did you feel about Midge's struggle set?
Thank you. Well. Vegas, Nevada. City that was built like what, a week ago? It's so new, it's Briss's tomorrow. I'm from New York, so for me a desert is Bergdorf's when they're low on Handmacher suits or Barney Greengrass when they're out of locks.
But just like the idea of this set being, is it worse to bomb or have no one pay attention to you at all?
Well, she is bombing.
Yeah. But bombing in like an active way where people are engaged
right.
And
just crickets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
or to just have total lack of attention.
Yeah. There's part of me that is frustrated because, like, Midge has never, like, why would you be going on a tour opening for such a huge act and you've never had this experience and you're just baffled? Like, this is par for the course, your first year of stand-up, learning what to do in these situations. In fact, open mics are for this because no one at open mics, especially in Los Angeles, cares that you're there. So it's all about staying, you know, staying laser focused in those moments. And another aspect of it that bothers me, the way they portray Midge on stage, is like, okay, we know why she, like, she's always doing well inexplicably with no jokes, and then sometimes not. And we don't know what, like, to me, it's like I could watch this and everybody would start laughing at some point and keep laughing, and it would just be the same as every other set that I've seen, which is just like, yeah, I don't see why, from what she's saying or doing, they're reacting in any way.
I mean, I guess for in this case, I felt like it was a little bit back justified with the food and beverage coordinator being like, look, these people aren't all from New York, and they're not all, you know, they're from everywhere in the world. So they have no sort of like central, that access point for you that normally works where you're from is not going to work here. I do feel like kind of did. I know what you mean in a larger sense, because a lot of her jokes are super kind of like writerly, and they're more kind of like,
oh, excuse me.
Did DC just get something right?
Yeah,
you won.
Oh, wow.
Congratulations.
Sweet. Candy's pouring from the ceiling.
Yes, I wish.
It all says Amazon on it. Yeah, sorry, guys.
T-Y-D-B.
Oh, Daddy Bezos. So, but yeah, I know what you mean in a larger sense. Although I will say, sometimes I feel like when you go back and you do, you're like, I've heard such and such, like Lenny Bruce, for example, like such and such a really old stand-up is really amazing. I got to go check out what that was like. And then you go back and listen to it and you're like, why does anybody find this funny? This isn't jokes as I understand them. They're not really, they're just like.
Yeah, it's the zeitgeist.
Yeah, but again, like I know what you mean though, where I do understand where it's like, sometimes it does feel arbitrary because at the end of the day, it's not a real audience. The creators of the show are in control of like when people find her funny or not. Yeah. So there is a weird part of it.
To me, it's like the Uncanny Valley.
Sure.
It's creepy. Like, I don't remember who this guest was last season, and I'll maybe have to edit myself in robotically saying it later. But a guest mentioned that like watching Midge go on stage and say things and then have the audience arbitrarily laugh at moments is mind-boggling. It like hurts my brain.
In a larger sense, maybe I bought it because it does feel like, and I guess they've done this already a few times, where it's sort of like that feeling that you have if you are lucky enough to have a profession and then you're attempting to develop in that profession, where you sort of like hit a certain ceiling and then you hit it hard enough that it breaks and you go up to this next level and you're like, it's like the thing of like life being a series of high schools where it's just like you're sort of, you get up to senior year and you're like, I get to like, I have Fridays off and I fucking have a killer parking space. And then you graduate and then you go to like the next, I guess, college, but like you go to the next school where you're a freshman again. So I guess I bought it in that larger sense, even though I understand what you're saying in terms of like some of the granular stuff sometimes can feel a little.
Okay, here's what I'll say. If I'm watching a show about somebody who is obsessed with stand-up, to me, and this is what I said before, I've said it last season, if you're into stand-up and that's your favorite thing that you're leaving your kids behind for and you're not getting remarried to the person you clearly love, like, why can't we see her learning about it and enjoying the nitty-gritty of it?
I like this set as a proposition of, oh, how does Susie fix this problem and cater to Midge's needs?
True.
Almost as like the goal of it being the obstacle that then Susie has to overcome for her to become a better manager. And then seeing it through that lens of like, oh, how do people who need to be sensitive to an artist's fragility, but at the same time, like, protect them and, you know, within a certain context, how do they navigate that? So I thought that was really cool to see in the episode. Also really cool to see in the episode, Liza Weil.
Yeah!
One more room service club sandwich and I'd beat someone to death with my bass.
We haven't officially met. I'm Midge. I'm the comic.
I know. You're a couple rooms down from me. I saw you the other night.
I didn't think you'd remember.
I wasn't drunk. Howard was drunk. And slow. He's handsy but harmless. You're hysterical.
Thanks. You're bassy.
Thanks. Not really up on my musician lingo. Just keep cooking homemade meals for these animals, and they'll be happy to teach it to you.
What a delight to
what
see
delight.
Her back.
So I got to have such a perfect know-it-all experience with this character. Where, first of all, I didn't, which is a not know-it-all experience, I did not realize until I went on IMDb afterwards that it was Liza Wild of Gilmore Girls fame and acclaim.
So you knew the full backstory of the person she's based on.
Yes.
But
they introduced her like in the hallway where her bandmate's like being drunk and trying to sleep with her. And then we see her then in Shy's band playing the bass. And I was like, oh my God, it's fucking Carol Kay. It's Carol Kay.
Carol Kay was this super prolific session musician back in the 60s and 70s who was a bassist. She played on Good Vibrations or River Deep and Mountain High. And she was just like part of the Wrecking Crew from that time, right?
The like famous session music, just gang of session musicians known as the Wrecking Crew. There's like a documentary that came out about them a few years ago. But yeah, Carol Kay is truly like one of those people that you read about and you're like, how has there not been a movie about her yet? And there still isn't because Liza Wild is playing Carol Keene.
Yeah, Carol Keene is her name.
Which I do feel like, sure, I think it's cool to have an homage to her if you're not going to fully do her thing and you want to put her in a fictional context with a fictional artist. Because I do think also, I don't know that she was touring a whole bunch. I think their whole thing was like, they were like just in some studios in LA, just like doing every band where it would be like, and we all play guitar and we're a cool rock band. It was like, no. On record, the actual like record that you still hear on the radio, it's like, all the same group of like 15 musicians.
Oh, that's so
and
cool.
Carol Kay being like kind of the most killer
now,
one of them.
Maybe part of the reason we haven't seen a movie about the actual Carol Kay is because she
said no.
So they Alice like, keeps Amblin, turning it down.
Amblin approached me.
Amblin!
Last year. Yeah, they were working with.
E.T. approached me.
They were working with.
E.T. offer only.
No. It wasn't Amblin, it was A24. And
Amblin 24.
I think that this was going to be like a sort of an interesting, like introspective sort of why am I talking?
The reason Carol Kay, you have not seen a movie about her, is because she hates when she's portrayed as she did when she saw this. Television
oh my
show.
God.
Really?
The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. This from a piece on Vulture.
Oh my God. Amazing.
God damn it.
The headline, legendary bassist Carol Kay hated Marvelous Mrs. Maisel homage. I am not a cartoon. It's the quote.
Hey, fair enough.
She said, it's a Hollywood silly fluff piece that has nothing to do with me or my history. They took a few things out of my book and created a character that's not even me at all. A lot of people are saying, that must be you. I love it, but I am not a cartoon. My life is not a joke. Nobody contacted me. I didn't know a thing about it. I thought it was pretty bad, kind of like slander, which sucks. It sucks to, you know, because I'm sure that wasn't the intent. And
her derision is almost cartoonish.
Yeah, it's pretty goofy, gosh. Kay might have a problem with an unauthorized depiction of herself. Isn't surprising. She also took issue with the documentary that you were talking about, DC, The Wrecking Crew, which she thought was unfairly biased towards the drummer. So. Historically, Carol Kay does not like seeing herself up there.
I mean, fair enough, you know?
Yeah. Although, having seen the whole season, I'm like, they're not doing anything like libel adjacent to you. But I guess if I saw something that was like Devin Quarter in like an Amy Sherman Palladino show and it was like some craven little podcast gremlin. It's like, hey, I like
if the record store dudes are recording a proto podcast on like a wax cylinder in the basement of Bleaker Bob.
Oh my God, that's you and Debbie.
Shout out.
Yes, it is.
Shout out Dave Bloodband.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But, tremendous. Oh my God.
Yes, tremendous.
Such a good performance. But also, I'm just powerfully, cosmically jealous of anybody that gets to be in this show.
Me too.
And Mrs.
How
Maisel.
Could you not be? Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. And Can you imagine going to a fitting?
I know.
And all the stuff that they had, stuff they must dig up, the reference photos. Ooh.
Baby.
I'm turning multiple different colors. Thank you. Kevin and Alice can see it.
Love to hear it.
That said, shout out to Dave Bloodband. He was great in it. I'm totally blown off course now by my just powerful, powerful jealousy. I do think, like, in my very different experience, I do feel like sometimes people – who aren't in like the world of comedy or even necessarily like scripted entertainment have a weird different like feeling about comedy, or they think that comedy is comedy automatically means mockery.
Oh yeah, you're
and that takes many different
yeah,
forms.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I can understand her kind of like having that reaction where it's like, it's a comedic thing. Also, it's obviously so clearly an homage to her that the character is named Carol Keane. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, I feel like I could understand, which almost feels like a Riverdale thing.
It almost feels like Carol King.
Oh my sure, God. Yeah. Like, the Five Seasons.
What's that?
Sarah, the Five Seasons Hotel in
yes,
in
yes, exactly.
Riverdale.
Where everything is like a little.
Sarah Florence College. It's like the greatest ever. Oh. The writers are on crank and I love it. So
Jingle Jangle for sure.
Jingle Jangle. And they have to say, all the actors have to say like, oh no, not Jingle Jangle.
I know.
But I will also say that the idea of being a woman musician in a male-dominated industry
and having done
endless amounts of work that is going completely unrecognized and uncelebrated.
My here we go was ironic.
I know, I ignored it and I didn't give you the time of day and it made you feel terrible and I kind of did that on purpose because you absorb your rage very well.
Yes,
Kevin.
I do.
So I feel like she's going to be sensitive. You know what I mean? Like she's gone through a life of having had to fight tooth and nail for every single job and being undoubtedly a savant, best at what she's at, because otherwise she wouldn't have been there, you know. And I don't like a life of like dealing with that kind of ammo all the time has to have your shields up. So I would understand that from that perspective, mm-hmm. having defensiveness, you know. And I feel like more power to her if she doesn't like it.
Yeah. You know what? Because we might be a little short on time today, I'm going to transition to the Twitter Q&A for the next portion of this episode.
Okay.
Tweet, tweet.
Too loud. Excuse me, Miss Bishop. Now, Bonnie asks, this is more of a comment than a question, but it's a good question. I'm disappointed the show makes little to no attempt at addressing Midge and Joel's complex relationship with minorities and people of color. As the Joel May relationship starts to build, I wish I could see any hint that this show is set in America post-World War II, with the first flickerings of the Vietnam War on the horizon. Not to mention that the mention of the Jim Crow Green Book was a throwaway. I think this happened later in the season. Forgot which episode. Is this okay storytelling in 2020? Valid point.
So valid.
Right? And especially if you're going to like get into it, it does feel like a very boomer approach to have sort of
okay,
colorblind,
boomer, yeah.
Like she just happens to be Asian in some
yeah.
way, or they
it's,
just
it's
happen
very
to be
not
black
okay, boomer.
Not okay, boomer.
Yeah,
I understand that.
Yeah.
So again, it's just like, I
wait
guess,
a minute, hold
yes,
on.
Yes, yes, yes.
Isn't
yes.
somebody's probably put this together on Twitter already, and mm-hmm. it doesn't actually go anywhere. So aren't I think like, so the Oklahoma, whatever university, something where University of Oklahoma, they're the Sooners. And yes. I think they say Boomer Sooner.
Yeah.
Is like their like slogan.
It is. Yeah.
And OU. Oklahoma abbreviated is okay. Okay. Boomer.
Okay. Boomer Sooner.
Somebody's already done this on the sidelines as like a sign.
Not
like
that I've seen.
University of Oklahoma game. Like I said, it didn't go anywhere, but it was the kind of thing that felt like I was really onto something.
No, but there's something here. Oklahoma
yeah, I
boomer.
Understand.
We those... should just say Oklahoma boomer to everybody.
We should.
Oklahoma boomer.
All right.
Oh,
speaking of Oklahoma, I know I said this in the last episode, but Will Brill, who plays Midge's brother, he is starring in Horny Oklahoma right now on Broadway.
Is.
That's why he has the beard. That's why. They wrote in the whole thing with
that. I was like, that you, sucks
oh, wow.
as an explanation.
Yeah. You gotta love a facial hair. Yeah, you gotta justify a facial hair.
Justine Lupe or Loop.
Through storytelling.
Also from Succession.
Also Colin Roy. Yeah, Colin Roy's girlfriend. You said the same thing as I said.
Connor Roy's
Connor
girlfriend.
Connor Roy, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Oh, great
yeah,
character.
But the May Joel thing, it is sensitive and it is interesting. I mean, they're not doing anything like actively offensive with it, but yeah, there's probably a missed opportunity with not
well, yeah,
embedding it with some
erasure
sort of,
is offensive, right?
Yes.
Like watching, like representation matters. So if you're going to see a character that you know you're going to identify with and go like, but she doesn't have to deal with anything that she would have to deal with. Mm. Yeah, what is that? But
I that being said, the other side of this coin is that I feel like my favorite parts of this season truly is I think the show comes alive with the people of color who are in it that are new to the show. Like,
yeah, for sure.
I'm so into May. I'm so into Reggie.
Yeah.
And Shai Baldwin, everything that's going on there.
Yeah.
And even like the stuff they get into in the finale, I think it's super interesting.
Ooh, okay.
Even when it comes to like race stuff, even if it's done imperfectly. So it is like, yeah, it's one of those things that's like a sort of 2020 question where, like, Daniel and Amy are not going to hire. They barely hired any writers that aren't them already. So it's like, do you engage with this and do it imperfectly, or do you not engage with it at all and stick to your lane? But then is that erasure in a whole different way? Because even to me, even thinking about like the end scene of them, of Midge, like, I don't know, invading the kitchen and breaking 19 health codes at the Vegas hotel and cooking brisket for everyone and everyone singing along. It's like, okay, like, you know, maybe think about the realism of that.
I thought about like how weird it is for a white upper class Jew that has a cook to be teaching a bunch of black women how to cook, how to season something. It's like, well, okay.
Yeah.
But, you know,
but it
I
was
think white. Three white people in a room is definitely the people that need to be addressing this.
But I think through
and we're just the ones to do
we're
it.
Just the
I brought these jumpsuits, guys.
We're just the ones to do it.
It was one of those things that, like, through this kind of rose slash lily white colored lens of Palladino's view of the 60s, of like, weren't the hats so nice and big? There was a sort of thing of, because this is even consideration now when you do period piece stuff when it comes to diversity or hiring people of color in your cast, where it's like, well, you know, in 1962 they wouldn't be in that position, or they you wouldn't have a newscaster, or the, you know, or even like in the Mr. Rogers movie, Tom Hanks, Christine Lottie would not be the editor of Esquire in the 90s for sure.
Yeah, but do you want to stick to the misnomer a lot of the time that a lot of people from I've dealt with that situation before where like, would they have, and it's like, they would. We just don't know about it because of the way history is told.
That's a good, really good point. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I feel like I apply different lenses to this show than I do something like Lindelof's Watchmen, where it's like, like for real dealing with race.
Yeah.
More than half your room's black. You really care about this and you might be screwing it up. And with this, it's like, you're kind of dealing with, you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like different. I don't know how to like give people grace in creative positions who are making a thing and not crushing them with expectation while still being like sensitive to people that might be hurt by erasure or be hurt by
crushing.
Yeah.
I think expectation is helpful from the outside perspective. Like, we should hold creators who get a lot of Jeff Bezos money's feet to the fire no matter what, even if they're Amy Sherman Palladino and even if they're a woman, because the fact is that's where they're at right now and they've got the money, so they're making the decision. So let's continuously hold their feet to the fire, because you know what? They're going to be fine, especially fucking, like, God lover Amy Sherman Palladino is going to take our criticism, spit it up, chew it out, and fucking, you know, throw it at my window as I drive by. So I'm like not worried about that.
And
I love her for that. Like, but, you know, I do think we should be as critical as possible. And the idea that there wasn't, you know, these, like, the thing is, the Carole Keane thing is a great example. Like, if we're making a movie about session musicians in the 60s, it's all going to be men. Nobody's going to go, there probably wasn't any women. And it's like, that's something you don't know about, so we should actually look into it.
I feel you. How did this stuff strike you in the episode, DC?
I agree. I do think it's like, it's tough. You definitely can feel them going like, okay, this show's been really pretty white up until this point, so we're going to attempt to also, as you said, Alice, I think like not just sort of like go like, we've been getting some flack for that, so we should like manufacture some black people in the entertainment industry in the 60s. It's really like, no, that is truly like, you don't have to go very far at all outside of anything that's realistic.
Yeah. That turn the camera slightly.
Yeah, exactly.
That she would Johnny be Mathis.
Yes,
type.
That she would be encountering. So I do think like it feels very like it doesn't feel forced at all. The idea that they would attempt that, I do understand. Like the scene at the end when they're in the kitchen and she's like cooking brisket for everybody in the Vegas kitchen for the group of like mostly black R&B musicians. And then they're all singing and they're whatever. It's like, on the one hand, you kind of go like, would this even happen? Would some of those people be allowed to be in the kitchen without getting like static? Like, what? I genuinely don't know. Like, I genuinely don't know. Like, was Vegas a place that was actually super segregated in the early 60s, or was it kind of this weird sort of like zone where that was more relaxed? I genuinely right. have no idea. So I don't know how realistic that is, but I also kind of feel like then there's a part of me that's just sort of like going with the like romance of the show.
That's exactly that is,
but I do think there's a push pull, but I think like Alice, I totally understand what you're saying, where it's like just sort of like interrogating or criticizing or being sort of rigorous about thinking about these kind of things when you are engaging with entertainment that is also saying like this is taking place in the flow of history, mm-hmm. I don't think is like unreasonable or like
it's not unreasonable.
Mean. Yeah, sure. I don't think anybody's saying that. I'm just saying like because it is a weird thing where it is. It's sort of like especially people who don't get criticized a lot in ways that actually mm-hmm. sort of like can stop their careers or what they want to do.
Easily.
And I'm not saying this is true of the Paladinos. I don't know how they react to right. online criticism or whatever. But you do see from some people sometimes. You do see from people sometimes. Oh my God, there's a red dot on Kevin, settling on Kevin's forehead.
Amazon, a wonderful company. I love you, Daddy Bezos. Thank you.
Okay, it moved off and now it's just circling Prime Day and the date of Prime Day this year. But was that the drone?
That's a sexy little kitty drone.
But I do think sometimes you see creators where it's very much like, oh, you haven't, nobody's been able to give you a note in 20 years and have you actually have to True. Do anything about it. Mm. Sometimes when their niece or nephew makes them aware that there's such a thing as online where people get to say what they want to say about a thing, they do, I think you see sometimes them go like, this is a violation of the First Amendment? And you're just like, no, it's not. People can say what they want to say about a thing. And that's part of the sort of like zesty, fun idea that we all get to like react to this thing
that's
called art that we all sort of, that's a lens that we all engage with the world through. So I think like every, you know,
I also think if it's something to the case where like we're creating this magical, realistic world in which an Asian girl post-World War II could be dating a like a Jewish well-to-do guy. And that to us raises the questions without answering them and does not, even if it does attempt to answer them, it doesn't answer the questions correctly within the flow of history. That's not, I don't think I don't think Twitter, that's problematic. I don't think that's like a horrible miscarriage of their duties. I do think it's a tad irresponsible, but I do like the fact that it calls into question. And I like the fact that we can have these conversations so that we can in turn examine like what this should do is make people more interested in what was going on at that time, I think.
Yeah, I think you can almost look to the efficacy of how much it provokes your curiosity as being
totally
sort of because and the dual reading of holding space for people that don't have our experience or people of color that see this and it's like, oh, this doesn't feel good to me.
This
doesn't feel like, oh, nice that Sterling K. Brown's on it. But at the same time, this doesn't feel like an authentically communicated idea of what something like this would be. But then also holding space for the idea of in this like uber fantasy of the 60s and highfalutin life on the road and of a certain class tier that Shai Baldwin is a part of himself. It's like, oh, wouldn't it be nice if you were all just like singing in the kitchen eating brisket?
Exactly.
Wouldn't
like
it be nice?
The Hamilton read.
Yeah, kind of.
You know,
sure.
Like these characters maybe wouldn't have been, like they wouldn't have had brown skin, but it's good to be able to watch them do this, like live this reality. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In a way. Not that it's good on the whole, but it's good in some ways. There's good aspects of it.
Yeah. Chloe, who has been on our show before, she wrote in with a question. Have you ever seen someone bump into a drum set as gracefully as the impeccable Sterling K. Brown?
Oh my God, it's true.
I do want to.
I was like, I want to be that drum set.
I do need to remember to. I don't know if you guys follow John Worster, who's a drummer and also a comedian, but one of his running things that he'll do on his social media will be he obsessively will look at like, are the drums in things period accurate?
Because
he also like watches a ton of movies and TV shows.
Sure,
and oftentimes they're just like, he'll have an image of like, there's no way they would have had this cymbal in the 30s. And I don't know anything about that stuff, but it's so satisfyingly anal retentive that I really appreciate it. I would love to know if these drums are period accurate. Oh, amazing. Oh, and then the jacket
collar flip afterwards.
Oh my God.
My first dance at my wedding isn't going to be that graceful.
Honestly.
I promise you. Which I guess now is the time to announce. Yeah. What the? Oh my Lord. You know what? Let her live. She's fine.
No, she should be taken down immediately.
Not electable.
Not electable.
Oh, I really quickly, before we fully moved on from May, yes. I just wanted to say that the actor that plays May, Steph Shu, is fucking awesome and kills it.
Yeah. So funny, right?
She is. I don't know her, but she, I think we were in the same college, like, sketch comedy group.
Really?
And so anytime I see, like, somebody who's, I already thought was really cool, and then somebody was like, oh, she's in the thing. My wife was like, she was in, I was like, oh, that's awesome.
And just, like, a different kind of, a different frequency of confidence and charisma that you don't often see in, like, this sort of ingenue love interest,
right?
In stuff like this, I think she's so interesting.
She's tomboyish in a way that's fun.
Yeah,
so to fun. Yeah, I think she's great. Let's hire her.
Okay. Yeah. No, all right.
She'll be going there.
I didn't know we had hiring power.
Right. Where did you get her headshot?
It's right in the board there. So.
Oh my God.
Yeah, she's picked. She's pinned. She's pinned. Let her know.
Okay, let's end it with maybe this last clip, which is Reggie talking to Susie after Midge's not so good set the last time.
So, your girl gonna get good?
She's already good.
Your girl gonna get good?
Yeah, she's gonna get good.
Because if she can't tell jokes, she can always be the tour chef. Mmm, this bougier is righteous.
She's gonna get fucking good. Hey.
Love it. And just two hard asses coming together and sparks flying. And the kind of, in the contrast of somewhere it's like, oh, I've been managing Shy Baldwin since we were kids.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're doing. And then seeing that soften Susie to a place of vulnerability and weakness in a lot of ways. I think Susie's MVP of the season for sure, for me.
Of all seasons.
Of all seasons. It's the Susie show.
I thought it was gracious of him to offer her another job immediately if she doesn't succeed at this job.
Mm-hmm.
Tour chef.
Yeah.
That brisket's got to be fucking fly though, right?
Have you ever made brisket?
So not this, not the kind of like, the sort of like Jewish American like Passover brisket I've never made. I've smoked brisket before in a like barbecue way, but I've had really, really amazing brisket at my friend's Dan and Maggie's house for Passover, and it's great.
I don't know if I've ever encountered like an authentic.
We should do a brisket
experience
when I come back for like the last episode.
Would you cook it?
Yeah.
Or would I? Because I feel like you might be better.
I would cook it.
Okay.
I'd be stressed. You'd have to help, but I'd cook it.
I would watch.
Okay.
And support and cheer on.
Time. You'd have to be there for the.
Yeah, and I would bring the cookies. Yeah,
there's water.
There's like a pipe in the HeadGum studio.
Are you serious? It sounds like it's coming in through the.
Yeah, but no, it's just right there where the microphones are pointed.
So if you've been finding this episode oddly soothing the entire time, it's because there's been gently running water in the background.
Yeah.
Can I give one more know-it-all note that I noticed before we closed?
Yes.
So the song that's playing when Midge is sort of like bidding farewell to the apartment, which I'm sad to see the apartment go too. I know you guys don't like the parents, but god damn.
If you've ever lived
real
in
estate
New York,
porn. Oh my God. That song, Manhattan. There's a different version of maybe the most famous version. I don't really know. The Ella Fitzgerald version of that song is in. I was like, oh, that was in a Mad Men episode because that's how I heard it. And I really liked that song. So I like the Ella Fitzgerald version is in a season one, episode 4 of Mad Men, New Amsterdam, that also contains Manhattan apartment troubles. Because Pete and Trudy have to like move out of their Manhattan apartment.
Interesting.
And so he ends up appealing to his in-laws to help them like stay in Manhattan because that's important.
You have
to
wonder
like,
if that is just like true, honest to goodness, parallel thinking, or if the music soup was like, what about Manhattan? And it's been like, you know, what was that, 2007 that was on or something? Like, statute of limitations, 12 years on reusing it for the same emotional beat?
I could see it being more of just a like, it just, that's just where you give that idea to 9 out of 10 music supervisors and that's where their brain's going to go. Such a good song. Though.
This is
and well used in this episode. I don't know who did this version though.
I believe it's Blossom Deary.
Oh.
And this is my favorite thing about Amazon, great company. X-Ray, you can always see who did what song.
Yeah.
And what
that's cool.
Yeah. Really cool.
I love
this.
It
the show
that
has put me onto a ton of really good music. And then the most vindicated I've ever felt is a few times, which is sad. I've felt vindicated very few times in my life, apparently.
Oh, no.
Is the few times when they'll go to a sort of like anachronistic, like more modern credits mm-hmm. song. And
yeah,
I already fucking, I already have that song on iTunes. I really have to give myself a like Daniel Palladino, Amy Sherman Palladino high five. Like when they went to, there's a song called by like, I think it's by Romeo Void called Girl in Trouble.
Wow.
It was like in season one or season mm-hmm. two. It's such a good song. When they went to that for the credit sequence, I was like, I'm a fucking genius.
Yeah.
I already like this
Locals
song.
Locals only,
or was
bitch.
It what, The Strokes and then, in season two and one of the episodes,
yes.
I think, yeah.
Did cocaine with them.
I know. I just want to.
You did cocaine with the Strokes? Oh.
No.
Not yet. No. 2020 no. resolution.
That's the crazy
The Strokes
thing.
Could just roll out of bed and be Susie for Halloween, right? At least in their heyday.
For sure.
In their heyday.
For sure.
Big time. Yeah.
Oh my
most
God.
Of them. Yeah.
DC, thanks so much for joining us on the show. Mazel Tov, what a lovely guest.
Thank you for having me. What a pleasure.
What a fun time. Sorry, I hope this didn't feel too rushed. We just had a little limited studio.
No, but
time
we talked
today.
So much at the beginning.
I feel like we got real quick and efficient with it. We said what we needed to say. We touched on some things
and
that we can
out.
Explore in the next five episodes.
We got the fuck out.
And we GTFO'd. People can follow you at DC Pierce on Twitter or DEECEE Pearson on Instagram.
Yeah, because I got into Instagram in the year 2019.
Right
so
on time.
Was gone.
Oh my God, amazing.
Yeah, and you can see wonderful dishes. Very inspirational, even for me personally, to see the dishes DC's cooking up
oh,
on
there. Oh, thank
you,
Kevin.
Yes. Absolutely.
And that's not some weird metaphor. I literally only post pictures of
yeah, no, it's not a metaphor.
Not weird.
You'll see what's
some
cooking
of these dishes
on his
he's
Instagram.
Serving up. They're hot political takes.
That's right. Follow at Alice Wehrlein, at Alice Wehrlein everywhere.
True.
Watch her special. My mama was an alien, and so
oh
my mom
God.
Is a human, and so am I, and never had to.
I mean, I act
to.
Like it's unreasonable to forget. It's a really long and arduous title.
And follow me at Kevin T. Porter. And then let's go out with the song that takes the episode out. Open the door, Richard. I love how specific of a
oh,
command
yeah.
that is.
Open the door, Richard. Richard, why
wouldn't
don't
it be nice?
Open that door.
A real song.
Yeah.
I did like when Shai's bandmate was explaining to Susie about how roulette works.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Which is like, having seen the whole season.
It pays off.
This is good storytelling.
So to say.
Yep.
So to speak.
Yes.
I asked Garrett if he knew who Carole Kaye was. He said yes. Big time badass. Played on so much amazing music.
Oh, that reminds me.
Nice. I guess
after
I'm still sleeping with him.
Nice. After I watched this episode, I went to, this was a weird like, where you're like, what is the algorithm doing? I looked at Instagram immediately upon finishing the episode and being like, holy shit, Carole Kaye. And there was somebody had posted a thing about Carole Kaye on Instagram like 20 minutes earlier, whom I follow.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Maybe
and
they
I was
just watched this
thrilled.
As well.
It's entirely possible.
Oh.
Oh, such a good song.
What is
Sly
this?
And the Family Stone.
No, we're just listening to music now. Okay, we gotta go. We'll see you next week on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Goes goodbye.
Bye. And we will see you next week on Marvelous Maisel, guys. We're going to take you out with Sly and the Family
Casey
Stone.
Casey Kasem, we'll see you next week on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, guys.
If you see the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goy's van around town, you get a free t-shirt. Come on by. We'll be at Pet Boys on Western and
Highland, I believe. That's right. Western and Highland.
So marvelous.
Until then,
brisket.
Tits up, everybody.
Yeah, baby.
This weekend, it's going to be tits up.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.